Peltier's case represents the best documented case of injustice in this country, of a man being targeted for criminal prosecution for his political activities and not for his criminal activities.
Leonard Peltier was the only one convicted of the killings. But in 1981, his lawyers found a memo from the FBI in which a firearms expert said he could not match a bullet casing found at the death scene to the gun believed used by Peltier.
I'm guilty of standing up for my people's rights. I'm guilty of trying to stop the oppression that I've experienced and I've seen my people experience. Those are the things I'm guilty of.
I am everyone who ever died without a voice or a prayer or a hope or a chance. Everyone who ever suffered for being an Indian, for being human, for being indigenous, for being free, for being other, for being committed. I am every one of them, every single one.
Stories to tell. I'm just one of a million or more stories that could be told. Sacrifice your freedom. Sacrifice your prayer. Take away your language. Cut off all your hair. Sacrifice the loved ones who always stood by me. Stranded in the wasteland. Set my spirit free.
My name is Leonard Peltier. I am a Lakota and Anishinaabe, and I'm living in United States Penitentiary, which is the swiftest growing Indian reservations in the country. I've been in prison since 1976 for an incident that took place on the Ogallala Lakota Nation. There was a shootout between members of the American Indian Movement and the FBI and then the local sheriffs, state troopers. Two agents were killed and one Indian was murdered.
Hello, this is Kevin Locke. Thank you for listening to Make No Bones About It here on KAOS 89.3.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
And you're listening to Make No Bones About It. This is Raven Redbone, and it's about eight after five on the September. I can't believe it's September 12th already. And tonight's show, we're going to be speaking with Brian Larney, Choctaw Seminole artist. I'm just excited to have Brian on. It's been a long time since me and him have sat in the same room over coffee and talked about different things in the world, but his art is amazing, and when he calls in, we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about that. Until then, I'm going to do a little bit of station ID, and again, you're listening to KAOS 89.3 FM, and I wanted to say that first compilation that I did, I just put together for our brother Leonard Peltier, who is... right now, his birthday, and happy birthday, and I want to give a shout-out to my wife and all the ladies from Hummingbird Stannis Lodge, who's at Tribal Sons gathering at the prison for our boys there. And again, this is Make No Bones About It, and you're listening to Raven Redbone.
What does it mean to be a KAOS member? Well, first, it means that you support the community service, independent music, and variety of programs we air at KAOS every day. It also means you have the KAOS member card, the card that gets you access to discounts from KAOS patron businesses throughout the South Sound on an amazing variety of goods and services, and they're only available to card-carrying members of KAOS. KAOS patron businesses include Aaron Barna Photography, Traditions Cafe and World Folk Art, and Olympia Supply Company. For a complete listing of businesses and discounts offered to KAOS members, go online to chaosradio.org. Just click on Patron Business under the Join button.
Okay, 1 second. And you are listening to KAOS 89.3 FM, and if few minutes, I'll have Brian on the line. And are you there, Brian?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, how you doing this evening?
Good, how you doing?
Good, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. I know it's a little bit later there in Dallas, but I was just wondering if you wanted to just... I talked a little bit about who you were in the beginning, but thought maybe you might want to elaborate. This is Brian Larney, Choctaw Seminole artist out of Dallas right now. I just know, like I was telling folks, that we went to school. It's been a long time since we've sat down, had a cup of coffee, and talked about anything, and it's good to reconnect, and I want to talk and share a little bit of yourself.
Yeah, it's been very good. Like Brian was saying, my name is Brian Larney. I do Southeastern art. I'm Oklahoma Seminole, Mississippi Choctaw, and Oklahoma Choctaw. So, been painting for a while, but what I do as far as my art is that I try to use my talent as a tool to actually promote the accuracy, then also the cultural part, because all of my, I guess the reason for doing art is because of the lack of the history books not telling the truth. Then the other part is that even in my tribe, there's great artists, but they didn't do everything cultural. So the only way for me to become better culturally for myself is actually learn, and then because of my talent, extend it out to the public and also share to the future. So it could be a pass, more of a passing of a torch.
Absolutely. And you know, I just was thinking, you know, I don't even know really how you how this all began with you, when it started, and you know, your inspiration. I mean, it's fabulous. I like I said, I was talking to you earlier, I still have 2 of your pieces hanging on my wall, and it's amazing how you captured the essence of the people.
Appreciate it. It's a tough story. The reason I started doing, in my mind, is really going professional, or moving forward to focus on American Indian art, is because when I was younger, I did art, did more graphic design, but I had my brother. He had passed away when I was in high school, so he actually died in a car accident. So after you have that kind of trauma or that kind of tragedy that happened in your life, you reevaluate your life and look and see what you can do to be a mark on when you pass away. And so my part was using my talent. So what I try to do is extend myself and go a little deeper into my art, because when you go through an experience like that, you always tell yourself, okay, what can you do more? What can you achieve? What can you help? Or what can you give back? And so my part of it was the talent, was the artwork. So what I tried doing was do the art, but do it the right way. What happened is that when I started doing all the research for the art, when I was younger, I saw a lot of European artists that didn't do it the right way. Sure, they walked around and you know, documented American Indians, but you also see a lack of, you know, there's a lot of inaccuracies in their paintings. You know, like, you know, the person that I really look at too far as artwork, which is stickball related, is George Catlin. But if you look at one of his pieces, he has a Choctaw picture that has a teepee on the side. And so once your common sense comes in, historical part comes in, then you finally understand that they did it more for a dollar, more than accuracy. So what I try to do in my part is preserve the culture, preserve the regalia, try to make sure that I do the right way for the cultural part, so when elders look at it, or even people who are very knowledgeable, that they look at it and tell me that I've done it the right way. And so that's more than a dollar in my eyes.
Absolutely, and it's depicting the people in the right way, and it brings back that what I feel, that heart, back into what had happened here. And I know that you had great influence with both your parents, who are educators and very much activists out there in Indian country.
Yeah, that actually was a great positive key in my life, because the only reason that you know to do it the right way is an educational part. And when I first started, I was taught, well, if you didn't do something, do it the right way. Well, in my eyes, doing the right way is mean take the extra time in the research, and take more time to talk to the elders or the ones that are actually doing everything. But at the same point is that if your goal is to be someone or your art's, you know, going to be hanging into a place where it becomes an icebreaker or an educational tool to learn, then you should do it the right. You should do it right the first time, because if you don't, then you'll actually be hurting yourself more as helping. Because when you do an artwork, people look at it like it's stone sometimes, or, you know, it depends on what region from. Like my southeastern, there's someone from Alaska looks at it, if that's what they see, they're going to go on my word or my trust that that's the way my people are looked at. So if I don't do my research right, then I'm misrepresenting myself and my people, but also a historical part, and I'm actually doing worse better than better.
Right, because when we don't do the research and don't do it correctly, then we're just adding to the lie that it happened here.
Also, like you were talking about my parents, you know, my mom's part of American Indian education, and both of my parents came in from Oklahoma. They, you know, they're born and raised in Oklahoma, but they actually did a relocation program from Haskell down to Dallas. And so when they did that, you know, they connected with the community down here. And so that's why, for me, my American Indian community is so strong in my heart, but also, you know, becomes a family. But the other part is that when you grow up, you actually see that, you actually see my parents that are strong in the community want to help out other people, other families in the community. But also, you find out that because the generation is actually second generation, because everybody's been transplanted and through relocation and moved down here, is that there's really not a good foundation as far as backing up, strengthening, or even protecting the rights of American Indians. And in so many words, that's a lot of stuff, but it could be as easy as a person come from out of town and they want to locate one of their family members or friends in Dallas. You know, they always make a phone call, and for some reason they always come back and talk to my parents, and you're like, yeah, we know the person, you know, and they arrange a meeting where they actually sit up, and there's a good connection to the other part where the landmark far as what my mom did with American Indian Education was eliminate mascots in the Dallas school system. And she actually went through that more of a gentle approach, and not the beating on the chest, knocking down doors. She actually met with everybody, provided a solution, and everything worked out. So when you see all that, you can't help but not do the artwork the right way, or even present your people in the right light. So even in my direction of artwork is that when I do my artwork, it's through my eyes. It's not through history. It's not through European. So even a tragic story like Selma Trail of Tears, in my painting, if you were to look at that, you actually think that a woman and a man are actually just, you know, hugging, seeing a background, but when you start reading the description of the painting, you understand that's actually a farewell piece of them never seeing each other again, that they're, because of guerrilla warfare through President Andrew Jackson, that they're actually saying goodbye to each other for the last time, because they're actually being shipped in two different boats up to Oklahoma. So it just depends on the perception.
Right. And in case we have some people that are near computers, how they can look at some of your artwork while we're talking, what would be the best place? Is it the www.yahlan.com?
Yeah, it's Yahalani. It's actually it's Yahvlane, but that happens all the time. But what it is, the description is Yahalani is actually Yellow Wolf in Seminole. And the reason why I use that, and also as an artist signature, is that I had found out that that was my fifth generation great grandfather's name after Trail of Tears. And so when you start learning about the history, it just kind of makes sense to add one and one together and use that to complement of what you're doing. But yeah, Yahalani is where you can see my artwork. You can find me on Facebook. I have all the artwork on my Facebook, which is Brian Larney. Then also you can type in YAHVLANE on Facebook, and it has my newest painting on there.
All right, and going back to what you were saying about when I heard what you were just saying right now, for me it's also like it's about a protocol, the foul, and the elders, you know, and I know like, because I know your parents through Facebook now, and I remember meeting them in Florida at the graduation, but I just know like they are movers and shakers, and they do follow a certain way, and it's when we follow the elders, I just feel that we are doing it correctly that way. And as myself, as a mixed blood person, I just feel that there's so much in this country that's been depicted as fictitious. And,
right,
and
right.
I feel that for me, it's a responsibility for us. I mean, we are the seventh generation, and it's our responsibility to be telling the truth to our people, all our people, everybody that's walking anywhere on Turtle Island. They need to know what happened here. And when we find that, and then we realize, you know, what has happened, then we can start that healing process. Because I also know through your artwork, there's a lot of healing that's going on when you look at certain pieces. And again, like you're saying with the voyage there where they're both separating, I mean, that's amazing. To look at that and
when you said it perfect, I mean, you're a living example of one of the reasons why you're trying to preserve the American Indian culture through various elements. You know, the part for me is that, you know, you really don't say, okay, here's your certificate, you're moved up to another level as far as helping out or preserving the culture, but at the same time is that it's tough to see people who the elders who's taught you stuff, they're gone. The generation right above them having problems when you're used to them being the core, the foundation of what you lean on to in case you do find yourself in a situation where, you know, you're like, okay, I can't answer that question, but this person can answer that. And it's tough because, you know, down the line, you're going to find yourself to be an elder, and then the children underneath you will be taking over your responsibility. So it's, you know, it's tough to see the cycle of life happening as you're living it at the moment. But at the same time, once you learn your responsibilities, then you're able to preserve and, you make sure that your culture, the preservation, and, you know, all the other elements that happen as far as making it a better life for the children or the future, and that's what you could do to be, you know, to leave your mark.
Absolutely, and I'm like myself, I'm really trying to listen really well because I'm getting older myself and I really don't know anything, and I'm trying to, you know, listen to all the elders and move forward and pass that, what we've been talking about, like there's right ways and wrong ways, but I think just the correct way is what I'm trying to get at, and by touching the earth and, you know, those knowing what really happened, you know, it's all about that healing too. And I was just checking out this one painting. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about it, because you have a very unique style. Anybody that's ever seen you work knows it. It's very unique. And the title is the Green Corn Ceremony. Talk a little.
That's the newest one. When you're talking about, you know, one thing that everybody asked me, that they're like, where'd you get the rich colors? I said, well, it's something that I see, and, you know, something you see in the regalia or the culture. You see the bright red, the yellows. You see the strong colors popping out at you, or visually to me. And when I first started, I started in watercolor. But I graduated to acrylics now, and that's what the new one is. But the reason I graduated from acrylics to from watercolor to acrylics is because of that red. If you look at one of my early paintings, you can see that red, it's there, but it's not as vibrant, where now, because of the acrylics, I want it to pop at you. But the Green Corner Ceremony is my newest one, and the reason why I did that was more personal, is because Green Corner Ceremony isn't a mainstream piece, and when you see it, there's always a separation, and there's a, you know, and for me, it's, I look at it awkward. And the reason I say awkward is that I was always told, well, you do church or you do Green Corner Ceremony. But for me, because I guess I'm more modern, is that I see both of them as important to be together. And the Green Corner Ceremony is actually what my grandfather used to do, my uncle. They were medicine men. And also the my father's guardian, he actually used to take care of stomp grounds, and it was up in Seminole called Yaha. But you hear all the stories. And if you look at all my artwork, the Green Corner Ceremony is actually the element to every piece of my artwork. So if you have the dance, there's stomp dance that happens after that. You see the regalia that's being performed right there at that moment. You know, there's turtle shells that are involved with it. But the old songs are what is a beautiful part of it. You see the families connecting with each other. And, you know, one of my inspirations, you know, for artists was, you know, our various Seminole artists. But they actually depict the Green Corner Ceremony, the different elements. But the main key for that one, that painting, is the medicine man. Because I wanted to show that back then, for someone looking at it as looking for an example, that if you go to Gather Nations, you see many dancing. Well, back then, I always try to think, well, before the wars, before the separation of the tribes, before the plagues and all that, you know, all the other stuff that you see here in history, they eliminated the population of American Indians. To me, that piece is the inspiration of a strong community. All the people together, everybody showing love, everybody doing the Green Corner Ceremony as it was back then, and everybody giving love to each other. So in that part, you actually get to see elements of the medicine man. You also get to see the preparation for the stomp dance, but y'all see the leader. The way it was is that he would actually describe in the Muskogean dialect and actually tell them description of the song, what's going on, what's going to happen. And for me, to hear that, you know, that everything's preserved in the old Muskogean ways, that it's not broken down in English, but done the old ways, that's the only way I can do, as far as my art, is preserve that in my own realm, to preserve it back the way they do it right now. But like I said, that piece I love, but I actually did that for the future, because when I was younger, there weren't that many paintings where I could look to and say, okay, that's my icon for being proud. That's my people right there, because of the lack of art. So my part is, because of lack of art, because of history, that's how I can give back. Because if someone that's my tribe loves my work at the art shows, they'll hang around. But at the same time, if they were able to hang it on the above their mantle, or hang it up in a, you know, on a wall that they love, when people walk in, then that you know, that's what I'm after, is to show the pride. And if they can take that pride and transform it into their life, then everything works out.
It's absolutely amazing. And he's also the medicine man. He's setting it to the far, and it looks like there's a he's on a little patch of earth.
Yeah,
And
it's an early morning shot too. That's when they mix the medicine together.
Yeah, it's an amazing shot, and all the people are there watching, and they're all in many different colors. It's really a very special piece.
Thanks. Yeah, the hardest part is doing research, because when I do my art shows, there's a lot of. It's funny because I look younger. There's a lot of people who test me, and they might be elders or professors. The elders are just testing me to make sure I do it right. The professors are trying to ask me questions. Well, you're not supposed to know this, or you don't know this. Well, back then I used to have books that I was studying, bring the books up and say, well, here it is right here. But because of what I do now is that you still have to make sure you do your research very well.
Yeah, I think that's with all things, and then yeah, it brings that integrity back. And I just want to say that we're listening to Make No Bones About It. This is Raven Redbone sitting in here chatting with Brian Larney, and it's 5:30, and this is KAOS 89.3 FM. And so how long have you been painting again?
Been painting for a while. My first show, I think, started I want to say 96.
Yeah.
It's been a while. First show I had was in Dallas, and it was more of a, it was my first main show by myself, and that's, you always look at it, you look at that little landmark and say, well, this is what I want to do, is this, if, you know, basically if I'm worthy of extending this as an artwork or extending your talent to become a profession. So, yeah, it was back then. So it happened. And then after that, you take that, in so many words, you take that courage and take the next step. And you're like, okay, let's do what you always see. And, you know, I remember going to Red Earth, which is in Oklahoma City. You always go up, you see all the big artists. And, you know, because my family knew them, you look at their artwork and you get to actually get to talk to them. You're like, okay, this is my next step. But when they see your artwork, then that's when I started getting some help, you know. It's more advice, but, you know, you're always curious to see if you can make that next step and actually win an awards. And then I actually did the big shows like Santa Fe and actually placed and won an award over there. You're always curious if you can extend your artwork from a regional section to more of a global section.
Absolutely. The Santa Fe market is, if you can, I guess, make it in that market, that's like the hugest Native American market.
Yeah, I mean, even
pushes you
the
forward.
The one that surprised me the most is that, because I do stickball, which is, you know, the forerunner to lacrosse, is that I actually got pieces in a permanent gallery that hang in there, but they actually sell my work there. So to extend outside of the American Indian realm and jump into another category, which is lacrosse, and for them to look at my work as a root of what was, that's a beautiful compliment to me.
Absolutely. And you know, the stickball painting, it's again very vibrant reds, and the person there, the man that's there, very physically fit. For those of us, like, can you just explain what stickball? I know, like, lacrosse, because I came from Aquasosity, New York, and I know what lacrosse is, and the similarities. Can you talk a little bit about that for those of us that are not too clear on what it is?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's funny, because that was my first two pieces for stickball painting. The reason I chose them is that I wanted to do something different from, you know, from other people's eyes, but not my people. And even that, I didn't see that much artwork. So when I started off stickball, everybody was like, you did stickball. You know, it's more of a compliment, but like it was more of a cool factor. But from the elders, it's like, they can remember the past. And they can remember stories again, and they would actually share with me. But what it is that there's southeastern version, and there's a northeastern version also. So what you're saying, as far as what you see lacrosse as or stickball is, I would actually meet people from Syracuse who actually won the lacrosse championships. And so we would talk, and they would tell me about their stories of playing lacrosse up there. But they would see my sticks, which are southeastern version, and they're like, yeah, you have two sticks. Well, we only had one stick. And the one stick from northeastern has a bigger web, where ours are more small. So if you were to look at three of your fingers and hold them up, that would be the web part of the catch the stick ball or the ball. But we had two of them, so you can see the big difference. But more from what I know on my part is that, you know, you see the beauty in stickball. You know that that's connected with the ceremony. You know that's the underlying root of what we do. And so that's more of, it's our sport, but also it's a cultural piece. And the funnier part is that down the line I'll do paintings, but the women play with the men. The women has the option to use the sticks, but it's funnier because they actually are meaner to the men. And if you were to see the game, is that they would grab them, pull them down, shirts would be torn, but you couldn't do nothing to the women because that's just the way they play, because women had lesser rules than the men, where the men would just have to keep playing with the two sticks, grab the ball, and throw it and hit the top part of the pole, or hit the pole. So, yeah, as far as you see in the variation of sticks, the art form related with the game is that if you look at one of the pieces called American Indian Stickball Collection, you actually get to see each tribe. Yet, if you look at it underneath, you actually get to see each year. But you actually get to see a variation, more of an art form. And even when I do show it or display it at different venues, they'll look and say, "Well, these sticks aren't made like that." And they're very solid on their statement. And I tell them, I was like, the person who made it is more of a sculpture. And if you cater it to and customize it to what your style is, of course, everything's going to be different. And so if you look at my piece, you'll see the way the wood's carved and the way some of them are double stick, the way the web's different, even the color of the wood, because some of them made from hickory, other them are made from different wood types. So you can see variations of them. But also, you know, even when I tell them, I was like, you may have a person who plays who's 5'4". You may have another stick that's made for a person 6'5". So the variation of the stick depends on the sculptor or the wood maker. But, stickball's kind of what gave me my platform to, you know, as far as raising my artwork to another level, because when I first did it, the people who knew stickball were the one that admired it the most. But when you look at it, after I won all the awards, then that next year, suddenly everybody's doing stickball. Well, my part was I didn't do it for the artists. I did it for my people, for them to buy it, because for some reason it's been hidden in the shadows for a long time. And suddenly now when I go to Oklahoma, everybody's wearing stickball shirts. Everybody's, you look at the cars and, you know, the rearview mirrors have stickballs, or you have keychains that have stickballs, or you show, and, you know, you see the love, or you talk to people, and when there's a stickball game happening, everybody's going to go watch because they actually have family there watching, but it's also preservation now.
Right, the historical piece that you were talking about.
Yeah.
That the future generations that look at that piece can actually have something to look at. I think that's amazing. And I wanted to, you know, like talk a little bit about some of the media that you use. You said you use acrylics, watercolors. Are there any other media that you like or prefer?
Yeah, well, when I first started, I used like what everybody else did. And I started off with pencil. And when people look at my artwork, or even younger people, they're like, and I'm humbled by this because they'll say, "Well, I love your work. I can never achieve to get to that level." Or they look at my color and say, "How do you get that? Because I tried and I can't get that with my style." And I tell them, I was like, every day you're practicing or you're experimenting. When I first started, I started in pencil. And then after that, you find out, well, you love the color. And so I actually jumped into pastels. And you start doing art form, and I did more abstract pieces. But the style that I had, even though it's very historical, it's very modern, so it's more of a detailed piece. So that's when I moved to another direction and started watercolor. And after that, I fell in love with watercolor, loved it. It, far as what I want to achieve, far as the color and the techniques, it worked out. But like I said, that red faded on me, and it would make me mad is that when I would paint red, I would see that wine red, that richness. But with watercolor, I would see it for like 5 minutes, and then it would fade into the paper. And so after a while, it looks beautiful, but it's not what I had. So after that, of doing so many pieces, that's when I started, okay, I'm going to start with acrylics. And the reason I haven't jumped into oils is just because I work so fast in acrylics. But I'll probably eventually jump into oils, but the acrylics work fine for me as far as what I want to achieve. And for me, the color that I love the most is the one that I had to jump from watercolor to acrylics was the red.
Right.
Because I wanted that richness to pop out.
Absolutely. And it does. And again, like I said, anybody that's ever seen you work, you definitely can tell that it's Brian Larney when you see it. And I love this one. I didn't see this one. Is the Ribbon Dancer?
Yeah.
Is that something recent?
I think that one I did back then. That one was a show when I would talk to some of the people visiting Mark booth or different conversations is that they would compare stomp dance to powwows. And I would first tell them, I said, well, there are two extensions, you know, depends on powwow, this more in tribal, where stomp dance is more Muskogean. And they're like, well, you know, they would ask this versus that. And one of the parts was like, well, there's a drum. I was like, well, our medicine has a drum, but at some moments he actually sings. And they asked me, where does the beat come from? I said, well, actually, it comes from the women. And they asked me, how does it do that? I was like, well, they actually have turtle shells underneath their patchwork dresses. And so when they see that, they'll see the turtle shells. Well, the reason you get this sound is that, which I love, is that the elders or the people now would actually have the turtle shell, and out of respect, they would lay on top of an ant bed. So the ants would go in and clean the inside of the turtle shell. Well, to me, that's giving back. You know, you're not wasting anything.
Yeah.
And then after...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh. After they do that, they would clean it, but they would drill the holes into the shells and insert pebbles. So that's how you would make that beat. Mm-hmm. And so... it's hard for me to say, well, they just had turtle shells, because it carries another conversation piece to it. And then when you say, well, when you insert the pebbles into them, well, that's how they do it. So it's a beautiful description, but it's something that I have to learn as an artist, because if you don't, you're not really, I would say, be an ambassador of my people, because you're not able to describe the whole atmosphere of how the ceremony happens. Mm. And that part's beautiful, because I remember there was a lady who was about 85, and she had passed away a couple years ago. Well, she would do the stomp dance, and the stomp dance goes for all day. And I mean, this is, you know, if it's a hot, humid day, you're sweating. Mm. This one would wear white heels and with those shells, with the dress, and just stomp hard. I mean, for no other lady, she would just stomp. And that's what, you know, her name's Miss Alexander, and that's what I remember the most, is that she would always come give me a hug, but I knew who she was, and I respected her so much, because she did the dances the right way. She did it with love and passion. And to see an old lady jump up and down to get that beat going and do it for various, you know, for several songs that would last about 10 or 15 minutes, that's tough. I mean, that's some endurance, but that's, you know, that's relating back to that piece, is that stomp dance is more of the regalia, the cultural accuracy of what they wear. Because a lot of people ask, like, well, what did y'all wear back then? So my part is, here's the regalia that they wore back then.
Oh, that little patchwork you did down there, it's amazing.
Yeah, well, actually I learned that because my aunt, her name's Jean Lee, famous patchwork designer. Because, you know, you learn... And it's funny because it's so intricate, it's not really done that well, and people who do patchwork could agree with me. You turn the back of that patchwork over, and you see the intricacy of the sewing, and it overlays, overlaps, and it just looks so confusing. But you turn it back around to the part that you're displayed on the front of the dress, it's just so simple. But it's beautiful to see the different parts or the elements of it, and that's why I always say that my talent is my art, but to get the full spectrum of everything, you have to see everybody doing their piece. You know, you got patchwork, you got the songs, you got the sticks, you have the preparation of the grounds, you have, you know, cookers in the back, you know, that share meals, you know, during a stomp dance, and they won't eat first. They'll let the visitors come in, and even strangers, they'll tell, invite them to eat. Even though they've slaved all day, they'll let them eat. Then after they're through, that's when they get to eat. It's just, you actually see another, as an artist, I actually get to see the love, beauty, and passion of my people. And so that's why I work so hard to translate over to my artwork, because you're not doing it for yourself, but you actually your talent becomes a tool to pass on, because you're gonna meet someone's granddaughter or grandson that's gonna look and says, "Well, my grandmother, grandfather was this person." I was like, "Well, yeah, I knew them, and this is what they did." So, you know, like I said, passing the torch is so key, but to give visual aids and instill pride into your future, well, to me, that's what I see worth it.
Absolutely, and you're also a storyteller. And you bring the painting alive with your stories, and I think that it's amazing that when I know artists do that, it brings it to a whole other level of being alive.
I mean, you learn daily, and you see everybody in various forms doing their part, and you know, like I said, I give you props because you're doing it right now. You're sharing other experiences like you've done for your show for a long time. You know, you're giving back. It's unconditional love that you're doing at this moment, and the reason you're doing it because you love the people in general.
Thanks. We're all, like you said, we're all doing it. We're here to uplift the people and tell that story that hasn't been told. And well, it's been told, but it's been For the most part, under the American way, it's been underneath this rug, and it's good to be able to have the voices, and especially the next generation passing, like you said, the torch. I think it's something that we all need to do. I just remember an elder I was talking to, like one of the things that he compared, like the culture that's alive here and at the Native culture, is that the stories. Telling the stories, people have forgotten to tell their story, and we all have to, Native or non-Native, tell our story. We have to tell it correctly, and we have to be able to pass it down, because I believe in my heart that everyone wants that peace, but we have to heal. We've all been touched by colonialization, everybody that's walking, and I see that in your art, and there was that one back here. We got about 5 more minutes, and I just want to talk a little bit about this piece I just saw, because I hadn't seen it before, but the Hold On To Your Traditions. That's another amazing piece. How'd that come about?
That one I did for the American Indian Film Festival in San Francisco, and when I talked to them, they wanted something related with my people. And so I was like, well, let me do something that's seminal. And when I did my art pieces, and all the women gave me grief on this, is that, well, you're doing a lot of men paintings. Where's all the women? Where's the beauty? Where's the pride of the women? You know. And so what I wanted to do is do a matrilineal piece where you actually... The painting actually has the grandmother that's passed away being held on by the grandchild, but the mother is actually taking the role of the grand. The mother's taking the role of the grandmother to pass her tradition pass forward. And, you know, it's tough to do the show that everything's not nice in the world, that, you know, that the grandmother may not be able to share visually or share the traditions because she's gone to the grandchild, and that's what that love is. But my part is this, is that the mother, is the key to everything, because if she doesn't retain the past, she can preserve and hold on and pass to the future, which is in her daughter. And it's a piece where you want to show that, you know, that's the old ways, and that even the grandmother has the old Seminole ways with the beads around her neck, and that was the old ways. But to show that, you know, and it's tough because other people will see it, and it's, you know, I try to do it as a good memory, but at the same time, there's a lot of people that actually have that life right there where they wish that their, you know, that their grandmother was still around, their grandfather was still around. They wish that they could learn a little bit more, but at the same time is that, you know, they're doing a great job. And actually, the, you know, the granddaughter, which is their daughter, you know, is actually an extension of the grandmother, because I remember all the old stories. Well, you know, there's a little kid running around, little girl running around there. Like, well, you know, how's she doing? Oh, she acts like a grandmother or grandfather. It's just because they have that tie. So that's the reason why I wanted to show that through three generations, that's how you're doing a preservation of the tribe and their culture.
It's a beautiful piece, and I think it definitely portrays what you were saying. And we got a few more minutes. I just wanted to tell you that I appreciate you taking the time to share with us this evening, and people can check out your art again at
It's YAHV as in Victor, LANE.com, and then they can go to Facebook and type in that same word, and they'll see the current artwork, which is the Green Corps Ceremony. Yeah. But thank you for everything.
I appreciate
it. Yeah, but I think the last piece that, as far as I do with the artwork, is the best memories for me are the ones that, you know, is the one you cry about, because that's the way it was. That's the way it was good. That's when that moment was the best memory in your life. And that could be over death. It could be over seeing elements of a culture. And that's kind of, to me, that's a description of how you should paint, because if you do it the right way with the research and culture, you know, you're actually, you know, you're putting everything you have, as far as your passion, into that piece, because you take pride in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know you're doing something you love when you feel it in your heart. And that's how I feel about radio. I would never have thought that I would be sitting in this chair. But listening to Lucas Anderson, who does mole medicine on Wednesday evenings from 8 to 9, and my brother Gary that's after us here at View from the Shore, and they've been doing native radio for a long time, and again, of course, Teokas and Ghost Horse, who's at, in New York doing First Voices International Radio. I've been listening to those guys for years, and to be here in this chair, it's quite an honor, and I feel very blessed to be able to set with all you guys and share like we're doing right now from our heart, and to uplift the people. I think it's extremely important, especially in these times that we're in now, when there's so much that's happening out there, but there's so much to pull from with the tradition, and bringing back that indigenous viewpoint that I believe every human being has came from. And
right.
And I just think it's important. So I wanted to say thanks for sharing with us this evening, and I hope that we keep in touch. It's been too long since we've, said at the beginning, sat together since Fort Lauderdale. But my sister does live in Texas, so you never know.
Yeah, and I can always go up there.
So, again, I appreciate you taking the time.
No, thanks for your time and the opportunity.
All right, and we'll talk soon. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do you want me to do that piece?
Yeah, would you?
Yeah, this is Brian Larney of the Choctaw Seminole Nation, and you're listening to KOAOS 89.3 FM in Olympia, Washington.
All right, Brian, thanks, and please keep in touch.
All right, take care.
All right, take care.
All right, bye.
And again, that was Brian Larney from the Choctaw Seminole Nation calling from Dallas and sharing with us this evening. You can check out his art. It's truly is amazing. Again, this is Make No Bones About It, and I got one more song on my way out. This one's by Jim Page, and it's called Song for Leonard. Happy birthday, Leonard Peltier. Please, everyone, write letters. Leonard needs to be free.
Loan me a minute, let me borrow your ear. I'll sing you a song about Leonard Peltier. He's gone so long in a federal jail, the innocent victim of a tangled tale. In South Dakota, where the fear was thrown, the president's a watch from a mountain of stone. They said all people were free to roam. There was a struggle for freedom in the Indian home. How many have gone before? Tell me how many more must be lost to the Indian wars. The company spoke to the high command. We need the deeds to the Indian land to dig for oil and uranium ore. Maybe have to start a little Indian war. The orders came from away on high. And if it was a job for the FBI, it won't be hard. All we'll have to do is just cause a little trouble and follow it through. In Oglala, where the spirit did dwell, it was a time they remember well. The women and children were gathered there when the wind blew a warning through the whispering air. And Leonard Peltier was one of those who came to the call when the time arose. And dangerous strangers are prowling around, bringing trouble to the reservation grounds. And that was when the agents made their play in a gunshot battle on a deadly day. And three men died in Lakota land, two FBI and an Indian man. How many have gone before? Tell me how many more must be lost to the Indian wars. Joe Stunts was a man that died that day, but the eyes of the law didn't see it that way. All they cared about was their own kind. I'm gonna get somebody for a capital crime. The charge was set for homicide, but Leonard got away to the Canada side, where he lived for a while in the northern town, till they came up and got him and brought him back down. The judge and the jury, they both agreed, two-time murder in the first degree. They pounded the gavel and they rang on the bell, 2 times life in a federal cell. Citations came from Washington, congratulations on a job well done. 2 agents gone is a mighty price, but if you want something bad, you gotta sacrifice. They took a Leonard Peltier up away in chains, all of those years to suffer in pain. Oh, but all of those years makes a warrior strong, and the struggle of the people goes on. How many have gone before? Tell me how many more must be lost to the Indian wars. And so it's been since days of old, when Custer died for a mountain of gold. But times have changed and passed him by, he's been replaced with the FBI. Oh, it's all so easy to weep and moan for a warfare fought so far from home. You can preach of peace from a righteous stand while they struggle for peace on the Indian land. Stunts was a lower down, the winds did blow with the mighty sound. The answer came in the driving rain, this man will not have died in vain. For the hollow power of the lock and key ain't nothing to the
power of the raging sea. The lightning strikes in the angry skies. It puts the power into people's lives. Oh, the weather is building to a mighty storm. And the words in the wind that come to warn are once more spoken to your ear. Only this time the name is the Leonard Peltier. How many have on before? Tell me how many more must be lost to the Indian War.
Hello, this is Floyd Red.